The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 8th of January, 2025, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. And we are 2 days away, 1 day away from Majority Rule Day. That song we're listening to just now, that is obviously like a remake of a song that every Bahamian should know. The song is Lift Every Voice. Lift Every Voice, right, Mr. Nuri? And we say Lift Every Voice and Sing. It was written and composed by two brothers, Weldon B. Johnson and Robert Johnson. These two men are the grandsons of the Stephen Dillett, the one we named the school after, right, Mr. Nuri?
No.
No? Hold on, that's their cousin.
No.
They're totally different.
Just a mix up of names. There's Stephen Dillett and there's Stephen Dillett.
Okay, no problem.
Right? Same people, but different people. And I'm going to see if I can go to my memory, right? The Stephen Dillett, mm-hmm. who was the first person of color
in Parliament.
Right, is not necessarily the person who the school was named after.
Okay.
And I put it that way, mm-hmm. For a reason, because the person who I believe, who I more likely the historians would say is the Stephen Dillett who the school is named after, was the headmaster and the private schools in the Bahamas for colored people. Two different Stephen Dilletts.
Okay.
One was the father, the parliamentarian, uh-huh. and one was the intellectual teacher.
Mm-hmm. And any relation?
Father and son.
Okay.
But just that we mix up the who's who.
Okay.
And then we put the wrong picture to the person, and then the whole story get thwarted and mix up.
And it's okay. Like, in this moment, I love it because...
Because it's total three Stephen Dillett's.
Right. And you just add another one to it?
Yeah, it's a total three.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. See, why it's exciting is look at how much we have to talk about. Look at how much of ourselves we still have to delve and comb through and put together, right? There's plenty, plenty conversation. Three Stephen Dilletts. Mm-hmm. One is the first person of color
in
the House of Assembly.
The Conky Joe man.
Right. The second
was a black Stephen Dillett,
right.
who was the outside son of Stephen Dillett. And I try to remember if he was a parliamentarian also, because there was a dispute between the two brothers. They had a light-skinned, near-white Stephen Dillett son, who did not like the outside child, Stephen Dillett, who end up being like the post office general person, and then he
postmaster,
and then he was like authority for schools and doing the rounds and trying to make sure black people get employment and whatever it is. And more than likely, when Sir Lyndon, that generation, was naming schools, they would have named it after the person who was opening schools.
The son.
Right. Yeah. But of course, the narratives were joined together because we didn't realize it was two Stephen Dillets.
Yes.
And just combined both stories, and then the confusion start, and no one has officially deciphered to say, hey, this is who this one is, and this is who the next one is.
Oh, man, that's super. Yeah. That's two kind of historical things that we discovered this week, right?
Yeah, okay.
In this time. The first was this unique device in our Constitution that the framers call a pindlingism, right, that takes the power from the governor general, or the discretion from the governor general, to determine who is fit, right, through the criteria to be prime minister. And they took it and put it into the hands of the party, not the people, but the party. Now, at that time, right, and that's because it's majority rule talk, at that time, the perception of the PLP, right, the party, is different than it is today.
Yeah.
Politics is different from it was today. The environment in which it is taking place was different, right? And so, like, at the time of majority rule going to independence, for many people, the PLP is the only party, and then everybody else were oppressors or attempting to oppress,
yes,
while the PLP were attempting to free people, right?
Mind you, there are different political parties before the PLP.
Yes.
But there's, like, recognized in the House of Assembly, were outside groups who formed a party-like structure, attempting to get a seat and running, but never get into the House at that time.
And so, like, in Bahamian political culture, are we refusing to identify you as a party, your organized structure of people and rules and regulations and policies? Are we refusing to recognize you officially as a party if you don't win a seat?
Well, history records parties, I guess, in terms of what all actions they do and momentous stuff. So if you weren't into the House Assembly, technically you're like a scrap group. Right? Scrap group don't get recorded much in history unless they do something phenomenal. You know, you hold a maestro with mace outside. That's why the third parties tend to do theatrics to make it into the newspaper, to make it into the annals of history.
That's why my African cousin did say, I wasn't paying attention at the party. I was, you know, drinking beer. But he did say, you know, until the lion tells the story of the hunt.
Yeah, but lions don't talk.
The hunter, I mean, they don't talk to you.
Okay. I mean, I know some people.
I mean, maybe they are talking to you, but you can't understand them.
The story is for man. Only man does tell story. And I always hearing that cliche, man tells story.
Who told you that, though? Like, every time you heard it, who was saying it?
Man. Man is the one who enslaves and kills.
And then man is the one that say animals can't talk. Why are you even trying to listen to them? They can't talk.
They already get extinct all the same.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Man is the superior
being. All right. We got some news to delve into. Headlines. Former CID chief charged. IDB report. Lack of skilled labor could be hindering economic growth. And PM to give national address on crime and economy.
Yeah.
Even called to extend maternity leave to up to 20 weeks. That's a nice headline. But before we get there, let's some housekeeping and then a little majority rule history.
Yeah, man. I like history.
So, housekeeping. Today is the opening of the legal year.
Yes.
You may have been, or you may be right now, in some heavy traffic and don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of road closures and traffic diversions for this ceremony, this exercise we call the opening of the legal year.
Is that colonialism?
Yeah.
The whole opening of the legal year?
Kind of.
Mind you, laypersons, those persons who's not part of the legal fraternity, say, why y'all got to wear the wig?
Mm-hmm.
Why y'all got to wear the robe? But not them, and don't change the system from that reflects the wig and the robe itself, right? Yeah. All of that is attached and a part and parcel to the overall thing.
You know why they say they used to wear the wigs? Because I wasn't there. I should.
I mean, the history of the wig.
Yeah, I should have gone to that lecture like in 1857. It was a super cool lecture on why we do the things we do in the parliament.
I don't know.
I didn't go.
No. But they wear the wig now.
Because it's black. But apparently they wear it because when they started wearing wigs, well, at that time, hygiene was like. Europeans weren't necessarily the best at hygiene. Mm-hmm. You know, like you guarantee QC academics, we got it. Sports, we take it every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But you say sack is the sport. Anyway, Europeans weren't that great at hygiene. Mm-hmm. And so like infestations of lice were a regular occurrence. Mm-hmm. And so people cut their hair to get rid of the lice, you get rid of the environment that they would live in, right? Mm-hmm. So they cut their hair and then they put on wigs.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now we put on wigs because we like how it looks. It's like uniform.
Yeah.
It's like the black robe. It's like the red tie. Mm-hmm. We don't understand why they have the red tie, but the red tie is important. When you see people walk, young boys walking.
That's why that's why they chose red?
I don't know. I'm just saying. The red tie means something. Big.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I asked that about SAC because one of the distinct things about the opening of the legal year, what I noticed is that they do this in the Catholic Church, right?
Mm.
I'm asking. I have to confirm the mm-hmm. opening of the legal year takes place at the Catholic Church.
I thought I do not know. Red Mass? Catholic? Oh, okay. So Red Mass and legal is two different things. Okay.
There you go.
I don't know.
This boy got history.
But he's Catholic, so he knows what it is. Yeah, I just don't know.
He's a good Catholic.
Yeah.
Just in case any of y'all listening and like to pinch, that boy is a good Catholic. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it is all, right, the vestiges of colonialism. And the question is, are we prepared to interrogate it, extract from it what we find has value, and use it to reconstruct a new system or to construct a new system that better fits us and better benefits us?
Well, that's easier said than done. Is there any history of that? When I said history of the colonized creating a new parallel system that benefits them or put them in the front first. Mm-hmm. You hear people pontificating from the back, but there's no replacement or suggestion on what we can do to tweak what exists.
Right.
They always complaining, this is not good, but no solution.
Right. We should even question, is the CCJ, that's the
Caribbean Court of Justice,
yeah, right? Is that different? Right? Is it sufficiently different to call it a different system? Or is when we talk about replacing the Privy Council with the CCJ as our court of appeal, are we replacing systems or are we replacing culture?
Replacing culture.
We're just saying we want people who think differently to interpret the same laws for us.
And you will find
in the
that
same system.
You'll find that these people think similarly because they're more British than the British people.
I mean, and because their education.
Yeah.
Comes through the British system,
yeah.
Or from the British system, right?
Yeah.
And so for majority rule, I guess one of the questions is, do we have the capacity to imagine beyond what exists?
And I love the word you use, imagine,
yeah.
Because it'll be the imagination of the Bahamas, and that could be a thesis statement.
Of the collective, yeah.
Of the collective. What is our imagination? Where do we see ourselves in the next 20 years?
Right.
And how do we see ourselves?
And would it look different, right, if the citizens were centered in the process of imagining a new Bahamas versus the politicians and the political class being in the center of the process of imagining a new Bahamas, right? And on that note, I wonder if the political class realized that they are the minority.
They're the minority?
And not the majority in the Bahamas.
We are political, culturally, but very political.
Right.
And by extension, they are the pinnacle of that political culture.
I argue differently that despite being the minority group, they hog up the majority of the space and perpetuate a culture convincing us that it is ours, that we birth them versus them birthing us.
Well, that's the narrative. Said we elect people from out of our community. Just recently, I think the Minister of National Security said the police that we have comes from our community. It's a reflection of us. So when you charge the police of being morally obscure, mm-hmm. right? It's because the wider society may be morally obscure.
Why? Okay, cool. But why are the rules applied differently then? If they come from us, if they are us, why do they demand? And when they don't demand, they allow, right? They allow the rules to be applied differently. Because it takes, you don't have to pay a fee. You don't have to sign up on a form to raise your hand and say, you know what, you should treat me the same way you treat everybody else. Hmm. That is what is fair. That's what integrity requires, right? Mm-hmm. That's what honor requires, that when you're in a position and you see that you're being given an unfair advantage, right, then you say, hey, no, I cannot accept that. You must treat me as an equal to them, right? Okay, so let's get into, oh, on that note, last night, the Bahamas Bar Association and Council for Legal Education, Eugene DePuch Law School, held a public forum. Mm-hmm. Death penalty, the worst of the worst. Presentations were given by Professor Carsten Zaxler from SC from Ireland, Damien Gomez Casey, and Renard Henfield, all attorneys. You can find the recording for the event on the Eugene DePuch Law School Facebook page. All right, let's go. Majority Rule Day, or End of Apartheid in the Bahamas Day. Black Tuesday, Tuesday the 27th of April 1965. Majority Rule Day, the 56th anniversary, January 10th, 1960. Be sure was neither an end nor even a beginning. Instead, it was an important milestone in a journey that was begun centuries ago when some anonymous enslaved person, they put slave here, but I like to correct it, okay. Anonymous enslaved person mm-hmm. struck a blow for freedom for the first time. We pause to pay homage to the personalities and players in this epic struggle. In a hard-fought and competitive election in 1967, the PLP delivered the following 18 members to a 38-member House of Assembly. They were Lyndon Pindling, Preston Albury, Clarence Bain, Milo Butler, Clifford Darling, Eldwood Donaldson, I want to stick a pin there, Arthur Folks, Carlton Francis, Arthur Hanna, Warren Lavarity, Curtis McMillan, Uriah McPhee, Maurice Moore, Edmund Moxie, Jimmy Shepherd, George Thompson, Jeffrey Thompson, and what you call the gentleman? Cecil? Mm-hmm. Cecil, you don't want them to mix you all up.
No.
Cecil Wallace Whitfield. Randall Fox, who successfully ran as Labour in 1962 and 1967 with the support of the PLP, support behind the PLP and became a member of the first majority rule cabinet. He figured prominently in the movement toward majority rule. Successful independent candidate Sir Alvin Brainin threw in his lot with the PLP and accepted the post of Speaker of the House. These two warriors for justice and freedom tipped the proverbial scale in favor of the PLP and the first majority rule cabinet was formed.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. It's a little bit of history.
Momentous.
Now, I would like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite Professor Dr. Stephen Ariner,
okay.
who wrote a new democratic franchise, mm-hmm. or toward a new democratic franchise in the Bahamas, examining electoral reform from the early 1900s mm-hmm. Straight down to universal suffrage. Mm-hmm. That's when everybody got the right to vote equally. Yeah? So not just, it went from people who own land,
could
have a vote, and they could vote wherever they own land.
Yeah.
Right, until it was whittled right down to one person, one vote.
Yes.
Yeah.
Universal suffrage.
Right. Majority rule became a public holiday in 2014. It commemorates the Bahamas gaining majority rule for the first time on January 10th, 1967, symbolizing the promise of equality, a level playing field, and fair play for all Bahamians. See, now we need to change that up. There must be inherent implied in that the promise of equity as well. Not just equality, but equity.
Equity has some significant meaning.
Yeah, because equality means that if you get to the school door, whatever school door you get, but if you get to the school door,
once you read first,
you could get in. Mm-hmm. Equity means that we understand that it's going to take you longer to get to the door than many of the other kids because of where you live and how you live. So we're going to ensure that there's transportation for the kids who live farther away to ensure that they could also get to the door. Mm-hmm. All right. I had some questions around majority rule. Will you have anything planned for your hour?
Man, you talk whatever you
want. We talk some, get into these headlines as we go through the hour.
I like majority rule and the history of it, but it's like, what is the significance of it now in this day and age? Is there any social, historical significance that, you know, you say, let the world mark our manner?
Yeah, like, the manner of our bearing.
Yeah. So are we moving towards, is that a goalpost guideline for us as Bohemians?
Right.
Majority rule, the significance. Should we be preaching, teaching a particular mantra of what we should be doing as a people?
All right. I will argue that we are moving away from majority rule.
Is that a good or bad thing?
It's a bad thing. Because majority rule is the end of apartheid in the Bahamas. But let's go to the phone for a second. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Morning, how you doing?
Hey.
Listen, I've always had a problem with this majority rule day thing.
Do you have a problem with the name or the date?
Yes. CA, what gives the right of the majority rule? Is it just sheer numbers?
But I tell you what it is. There's an inherent principle that within majority rule, majority cannot rule without hearing the voice of the minority and weighing it and considering it. Like, that's supposed to be an inherent element.
What if I change the wording to Civil Rights Day? Would you be still offended?
I propose that what the black people were fighting for was equality. Blacks were treated as, and they were not equal to the so-called whites and whatnot. And so, because if you say the majority should rule just because they are the majority, then you open up a whole can of worms. Because you have some, and you know, in like in African societies, where you have the majority people, even in the Bible, with the case of the Israelites when they were starting to become so great in numbers that the Pharaoh looked at them and said, man, one of these days these people are going to overtake us, and they have become the majority, so now we have to do something with them. So I have a problem. I've always had a problem. And I've asked this to Jeff Lloyd when he was a talk show.
Let me stop you again. Do you have a problem with the verbiage used?
Yes.
Or so if the verbiage is changed, but the same meaning? Exact same meaning, but the verbiage has changed. You would have no problem with it.
We were fighting for equality.
So can I call it end of apartheid day?
I mean, that sounds too much like Africanism to me.
But that's what we experience. See, when we're talking about the name, naming it is important so people can understand exactly why we commemorate it and what is expected from us, right? I think I highlight that what actually occurred was the end of apartheid in the Bahamas, and that we were living under similar conditions up until that point, similar conditions to our brothers and sisters in South Africa.
Yeah, but I mean, is the word apartheid, is that a made-up word, or that is a word that came out of...
No, that's a real word.
That's a real
word. That's a real word.
Yeah, it's a real word.
Because, we tend, and this apartheidism existed in all of the European colonies across, wherever the Europeans...
Just like South Africa, yes.
There was the separation of colors and whatnot. But I just want equality or equity rule or equity just to symbolize it, because the majority has the connotation that, that the whites don't have any say, that the whites, just because they are the 15% don't matter.
But let me remind you that majority rule is a coined phrase. It's nothing something that we made up. It's a phrase for democracy. And democracy, and remember, let's take it just as strictly as democracy, where one man equals one vote. Now, this equality thing is a social thing. That was not about the politics. That's what you're adding into the narrative now. Now, let's stick to the politics. And we're talking about where everyone had a chance to vote, and the majority of that vote will be the government. That's where the term majority rules come in. This have nothing to do with equality. Nothing to do with equality, but we're talking about democracy. Now, you might say Democracy Day or Democracy Rule Day.
Yeah, but I mean...
But it has nothing to do with equality.
I mean, because the social issues of the day led to the fight. Because even if you looked at the situation in Haiti, or the Haitian...
Revolution.
The fact that the mulattoes, who had the economic power, but they had no social prestige. They had no voting rights. Okay? And so what they were fighting for was social and...
Political
right as well.
And economic?
So because they were treated as, you know, they couldn't, even though they were so-called, had money, they had whatnot, but they were still ostracized because of their so-called color.
Still rendered lesser than.
Like the watchword of freedom. I mean, what were the French, watchword of the French?
Equality and liberty?
Yes. That is what they were fighting for. That they needed equality. That they felt that they would not. And so this majority rule day, in most people's mind, the connotation is that because we are the majority blacks, then we should be in control.
And before you go, when you say majority, are you saying black people minds, or are you saying white people
concubine? Citizens' mind.
So, I mean, it's not my mind, right?
Yes,
because I don't worry about I don't worry necessarily about the minority per se, once my vote counts. So I'm seeing that there's a significant, there's a significant amount of black people who has taken it upon themselves that they will be herald the rights of other people and forgetting their own rights, mm-hmm. right? That you feel the need that you need to take care of other people. Let those people complain.
All right. And thank you very much, caller. I got to get the next caller on. As we go to the next caller, I think that calling it what it was... ending apartheid, right? And understanding...
It will offend some people.
No, it shouldn't. See, this is the point.
Yeah.
If it offends you, then we know who you are.
Yeah. The majority rules offending some people too.
Like, if you are offended that a people who were once subjected to an apartheid state are commemorating and celebrating the day that apartheid state was deconstructed,
mm-hmm.
then... suggesting to me that you prefer to live in an apartheid state.
There are some people who...
express that
verbiage,
already with their money?
Their verbiage.
Oh, that's not what you were going to say? Okay.
Their verbiage and the narrative saying, man, they don't want to be reminded about that no more.
Well, that's
some day is over.
Well, then let your money help you clear your memory. Yeah. Good morning, caller. Listen, caller, I'm sorry I miss you. Please call back. The numbers to call, 324-316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720 for our Family Island listeners. Perhaps this is another space in which we could examine what it means, right? Majority rule from the perspective. The caller was on the phone for 3 seconds.
And
let's go to the call.
One must also appreciate that the Bahamas had a large mulatto class, that Long Island class, mm-hmm. who felt that they weren't equal. Right, and this is why they formed political parties, led that political charge, joined the black majority, and mm-hmm. said, "Man, we mulattoes want to be a part of this movement of seeking equality and
right.
majority rule."
Okay, caller. Good morning, caller. Let's go to the next caller. We have to get back to that point, Mr. Nuri, about mulattoes, Long Island. Good morning, caller. Let's go to the next caller, producer. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Aaron Green. Good morning, Nuri.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Fine. Coming around your line, eh? No trouble getting in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hey, I like what y'all do from Monday with the majority ruling, educating the public.
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating. You mentioned Steve did it, and I think Paul Addy is similar, eh? Paul Addy Senior and Paul Addy Junior.
Mm-hmm.
They all was in Parliament.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But history.
That, pardon me?
I'm saying it's just so much history that we could be entertaining and educating ourselves with. We just got to figure out how to pull it out in the and put it in the right form to make it accessible.
Yeah. To the gentleman who called, he prompted me to call. Before majority vote, we was in apartheid. Similar to South Africa.
They can cause me read Ona Bailey poem?
That's right.
Trying to go to the Savoy?
Exactly. I live it. And you didn't live it. You were in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
I live it. You never live it. But we, as a revolutionary, for us, so you and you and them could be free.
Mm-hmm. I've lived it, you know. I've had these little small...
You're 72, eh?
But listen, what I'm telling you is I've had these little small experiences. See, I was born into the political class, but I'm on the fringes because I don't rule and I don't behave, right? Uh-huh. But I've had my experiences attempting to go and see friends in Lyford Key who have followed the proper procedure for me to get in, and security looking at me like, why I come here talking French to them, and I know they only talk English, right? I've had, on multiple occasions in various parts of the islands by institutions, right? Because that's, with the security at the gate, that's kind of like a structural violence with individual people. I experience it. Yeah, man, and plenty of us have, which is what...
You're experienced racist, okay. Also in Grand Bahama, a good friend of mine in Spanish Wells, and I don't know if y'all know this. He's a good friend of mine. He's a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
He said you have to lead. Black got to lead the islands before dark.
There was a time when that was the culture. Now, listen, that I've experienced, and let me tell you just briefly about that experience, because I was a young girl going to Methodist summer camp in Eleuthera.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on one occasion, we had a project, we link up with Methodist Church on Spanish Wells, right?
Right.
And we were there in the daytime. I think we had a meal and everything. Of course, there was no intention for us to spend the night there, right? Because we're going back to the mainland to our campsite. And it was interesting because there was some of that energy, but then it was also obvious, right? The people look and say, these kids are here from the church. They come here to fellowship. They come here to work. I think we do a little cleanup project or something like that. I can't even remember. But the attitude and the energy, the young people, the program was different from the stories I had heard from people, including my own family members who are much darker, beautiful, dark mahogany skin than me. Their personal experiences in Spanish Wells, you know, were different from mine.
I experienced it too.
Yeah, but you know, we want to give grace because not... Like not everybody, even at that time, agreed with that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you be the one that stands up to say y'all are wrong and you risk being thrown off the island, right? Like, or thrown out your family or being made to feel uncomfortable. So we give people a little bit of grace in these spaces, you know?
And I'm glad you share that story because you experienced what I experienced. Because in our typical churches,
mm-hmm.
Black had to sit in the back.
When you were younger?
Not me. That experience.
You mean your parents? Your parents.
I thought my generation, my great grandparents and all that.
Yeah,
just black had to sit in the back,
mm-hmm.
and the white in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was making that transition at my church. I experienced, I never understood at the time, because I thought I got all I got away. But when the, what we call them funky Joes, we call the white, when they come to their, when it comes to the church,
mm-hmm.
they normally sit together, black man and dark chick down. When it's time for the service, they all sit together. And I never noticed. I did it until I studied psychology. They use psychology of it.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much, Pumpkin Eater.
Uh-huh.
I got to make a transition.
Sure, continue, man. Yes, continue to talk about this. And
well, yeah, I want to talk about something in particular about majority rule.
Sure, of course. I mean to continue to talk, but I love it.
Thank you.
I love the history.
Yes, sir.
The generation needs to know.
Absolutely. I'm going to try and pull up out as much as I can from Mr. Newry in this hour. Mr. Newry, like in this modern current time, right, is it possible that although we jumped to independence, that we haven't fully realize majority rule, and it's the full realization of majority rule that should have led us into independence? I said, because we jumped from the bush to the boardroom, from the outhouse to the executive bathroom, like just make one leap, is it possible that we are perpetuating the most pernicious or dangerous elements of the apartheid state before majority rule in other ways? In education, I'll argue that there's an academic or education apartheid taking place in the Bahamas. In terms of housing, right? I think there's definitely in terms of housing. And more startling is when we look at the family islands. But let's stick a pin. Let you think about that for a little bit. Because if you say, Aaron, you're crazy, I don't see it, I'm cool with that. We go to the caller. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
On your last topic, right?
Yeah.
Just an observation. You go into a church and you sit in the wrong seat and somebody comes and stands over you and they clears their throat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't think that is too far removed from the whites sitting there and the blacks there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's almost as if we have slid into those roles of being a kind of slave master to our own people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in that sense, the prejudice is worse. Now, we wouldn't call that racism.
Yeah.
But it's far more harmful than what we had gone through previously.
When we do it to ourselves.
When we do it to ourselves.
Thank you. And in that particular space. Because what I think is, if I come to church and because I ain't been to church in so long and I sit in the wrong person seat, when the person slap me, they could be like, remember when you did get confirmed? I wanted to recreate that experience for you so you could remember us again. Right? Like you're going to grip me with love when I come into the church and not with a row and why you ain't been here in so long.
I think you need to attend a couple more churches though.
Why? What happened?
No, because I think you need to broaden your experience on church life.
No, man, church life is good. You know, are you an Anglican?
I used to be.
When I got confirmed, the talk was when the bishop put his hand on you, his hand was so heavy it felt like a slap.
No, I didn't even remember that.
But, right, so that's what that joke is about. Like, at the time that I got confirmed, with the bishop's hand was so heavy, people used to joke and say it, like he'd slap you. And I just used to joke like, well, that's a good way to get the word of God into young people's heads. You get to jam it in sometimes.
Hey, but scripture says, lay hands on no man suddenly, you know.
Yeah, that's an act of love. It's an act of love.
Oh, please tell Ms. Dury good morning, please.
I will do.
Blessings to you.
All right.
I have a text here that says, Aaron, a thought. Mm-hmm. If we, the people, are the majority and we are not ruling, then I would conclude that the majority are fools. Ruled. Power to the people. 52.
Yeah, I suggested earlier that the political class is a minority, but they ruling, and
I'm not sure if they ruling
in collusion with the merchant class.
That's two different classes.
Right, in collusion with the merchant class.
What about the academic class? See, this is getting broader.
Right.
Then what about the social class?
Okay,
I think getting broader again.
The academic class is failing. They're failing. I'll put myself in that space. We're failing to produce. We're failing to translate. We're failing to expose. Now, the researchers, like we remember the middle class study, the violence study, those studies take a lot of time to put together and go through the documentation. And so some academics are producing research, but then other academics, the academic class, the broader ecosystem is failing to take that work and presenting it in a way to the public for them to see that it is relevant to them, right? Like the middle class study, it was released. We still got the academic class has a whole lot of work to do because the vast majority of people look at their wallet, look at the research and say, well, it must be the educated academics that are wrong because these receipts in my wallet are not wrong. Until you hit a catastrophe and you realize they're wrong.
I have another text I want you to consider. It says, marking January 10th, majority rule day. Oh, sorry. Making 10 January, Majority Rule Day, entrenches the narrative that majority refers to black bohemians only. And basically, this they're challenging the narrative of what majority rule means. It seems to be a black thing. And I remember going back to the Long Island and the mulattoes, their narrative, their participatory agent on it has been excluded in the majority rule story. Maybe purposefully, you know, and because you know majority rule is owned by a political party.
Here's the thing. You remember the middle class study where a lot of people discovered that they were not middle class and then they said, to hell with the academics. Yeah. I am telling you I'm middle class. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that they're not white. A lot of people don't know their ancestors were classed as black. See, a lot of people think that...
But they think they know that.
No, they know. They think that back in that time, that they would have been on the other side of the line. And they don't realize that perhaps they were considered black also.
Okay, let me
And so that this majority rule also is about them.
Let me craft a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Taylor considered himself black.
Yeah.
In his writings, you see that we, the Negro class, he say he's black. But clearly, he is mulatto.
But at that time, mulatto is just a derivative of black. Mulatto was
we understand that.
But it was used to a divisive term.
But there were different groupings. That's my point. There were black, there were mulattoes, there were white.
Yeah.
They all had different social
status and political status and economic
we
status.
We know the mulatto class started... party politics, right? They go on research it, they travel through the Caribbean.
And that's why I wanted to get back started to, that's why I wanted to get back
party
to Long
politics,
Island, right?
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They invited the Negro class, dark-skinned people, to be a part of this party politics.
No, pause.
Go ahead.
They knew that they needed
Yeah,
pause.
But they still invited
no,
them.
No.
So they didn't invite them.
There's a difference, right? Mm-hmm. You know that you need them.
Yeah, that's just adding to it.
So you invite them hoping that they would come as opposed to... I have this thing. I could do it without you, you know.
But they invited
you. No, pause. I have a thing and you could do it. I could do it without you, you know, but I invited you because I liked you. Voices. I got this thing. I cannot do it without them.
Yeah.
So I invite them to come and
join
me.
My point is they invited them to be a part of this movement.
And you say you ain't part of the political class.
Yeah, they invited them. Mulattoes invited Negro Bohemians to be a part of this movement of change, equality, because clearly it was an equality in the Bahamas, right? Mm-hmm. Or there wasn't any political involvement in the Bahamas.
Or maybe those educated mulattoes at that time understood that mulatto was a divisive term intended to separate and ensure that none of the two groups would ever form a majority if you keep them separate. The academics knew, like Milton Taylor, that Henry Milton Taylor, who refer to himself as black because he knew he was black, but more importantly, he knew the danger of adopting that term mulatto because it intends to divide.
And I agree with that.
Okay.
However, as we march towards majority rule, as we accomplish majority rule, they were excommunicated. All of them, kick out. We don't no longer need your kind inside. Also,
does it turn on the interpretation of invite?
Then, we can have you interrogated. Yeah. Then they're also labor. Labor, also Alvin Brennan, were all involved in this majority rule movement, right? Both labor and the mulatto was kicked out in terms of the movement of majority rule.
Remember I tell you we have to get Dr. Stephen Aaron on?
Okay.
Because he said that if we read the book, because I haven't read the full book yet, but you read the book, and Fox says... Randall Fox says, you know, he gave us a similar to MLK Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I may have integrated my people into a burning house. Like, suggesting that maybe he made the wrong decision by siding with the PLP. Mm-hmm. We need to bring that into the conversation. Let's go.
Or call a hang up. Just about to call us yours. Hang up so quickly, man. I know Aaron like talk, but she's coming. She's actually coming to you. I see her put her hand right there, and then you hang up. We can take a quick commercial break there, Aaron.
Let's go to the caller first.
And then, as soon as the caller finishes, we go to commercial break. Go ahead, caller. We even paused because of you.
You know, we are forgetting that we are discussing politics, you know. You know, like say, you know, that whole black and white and middle class stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, presently, right, blacks in America are a part of a larger group called persons of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they identify as persons of color.
Right.
But ironically, as persons of color, now has a hue or a skin tone. So those persons of lighter hue tend to be driving the bus. And the persons of darker hue seem to be, ironically, at the back of the bus again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The straightening of hair, the extended weaves, the skin lightening.
The administrators had refused to allow students to wear their African descent students to wear their hair naturally.
It's all apart, for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Jumbe Festival in Coconut Grove.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the thing, right?
Yeah.
And every year, it expanded. It expanded without the help of government. So, eventually, for some reason, it was moved from that site across the road in the present place of the National Insurance Building. And then after a while, it was bulldozed. Mm-hmm. You know, now, I'm always of the view, what would happen if we had a Jumbe village in every constituency in this country? You know, we would probably have no need for politicians.
Okay. Let's go to the commercial break now. But let me read this, right? Say, majority rule is not technically about color. It's about everyone having one vote. And that form of democracy with one vote system. The will of the majority of the people will be done. And that's what majority rules in general.
End of apartheid.
Yeah, end of apartheid. One man, one vote. Equality in terms of democracy. And so when people get offended by the term majority rules, they think in racism, they take in black in terms of, but it has nothing to do with color. It's actually a political term. Majority rules is a political term, which meaning democracy.
It took place like in Ireland, maybe?
Maybe if everyone was white and they had majority
3% Irish population,
yeah,
black
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what your test showed, right?
Yeah, I'm 3% Irish.
The black set though.
Yeah, whatever color set there is, I'm 3% Irish. Let's take that commercial break then now, Kermit.
Producer, let's go to the break, please. You have been on the clock with Aaron Green. We come back.
Or we'll come back on the next side of the show. Either one of them.
Thank you. I understand what you're saying, producer. Let the music play. And let me just read this into the record. Yesterday, we had Division of Cultural Affairs. Radio AM. This Friday, January 10th, is Culture at the Key, Arawak Key. Activities from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. is the All Bahamian Book Fair. You still have time to contact the Division of Cultural Affairs and get yourself a spot. 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. is the children's native show. I'm going to call this group LeBron and his accordionists and the Prince Albert drummers. 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. is Bahamian folktale costume competition and indigenous Junkanoo competition. Two separate competitions. First prize, $5,000. Second prize, $2,500. And from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. is Bahamian Flicks. I need y'all to get y'all costumes in order because I got the frog part and I got the dress up in soldiers' clothes part. And the only part I need now is the shoot the crows part. And I gained for my $5,000. So you need to beat me there. You can find the Division of Cultural Affairs on Facebook. Definitely on Facebook. I'm trying to find the number that I wrote down yesterday to contact. You can contact Ms. Anya Bow. You can contact Ms. Therese Davis. You can contact Mrs. Portia Sands. Or you can contact Moya Thompson for more information or to sign up.
Breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious boy, this real serious boy.
Wait, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave his boy one big, big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the crack crime homicide. They don't ask about you. And your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Island.
Please, they'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.